Hello, this is Thompson Smiley with another of those incidents where we take our Smiley's Picks into the studio. And uncharacteristically, this segment is going to be a monologue. There's no guest, but I want to indulge in a little stream of consciousness on the subject of the tragedy of the current situation with the Lowell Orchestra. I have to say this is a personal statement and is not the views of the Lowell magazine or I'm sure WUOL, but they are based on a certain amount of experience, both as an employer of the Lowell Orchestra, as somebody who attended its concerts for many years, but above all somebody who cares deeply about Lowell and music. I think the first thing that needs to be said is the present situation is a tragedy. It's a tragedy for the players who've studied and spent their entire lives acquiring one particularly elusive skill and maybe no others, and who now find that career taken away from them, not just in Lowell, but nationally as we see the concert audience shrinking. But it's also a tragedy for generations of management and board members who have invested time, energy, and in some cases great quantities of money in trying to keep afloat the Lowell Orchestra for the last 30 years, because I think the seeds of this current tragedy lie way back in the 1980s, which you may recall was a heady time for the arts. Big cheques were being written by big corporations. Board and players were assured at the time they went full-time that the money would be forthcoming to keep 71 players employed for the best part of the year. In fact, this money never was forthcoming, and it proved repeatedly over the last 30 years that the business model for the Lowell Orchestra was unworkable, that no amount of marketing and no amount of cutting and shaving and reducing salaries would make expenses match the available earned and contributed income. So deficit was piled upon deficit. Every now and again, the orchestra was bailed out by a deferred gift, usually a large sum of money left by somebody in their will. But these gifts are easily predictable, and the orchestra management are probably true when they say they see none of them in the immediate future. There are said to be endowments totaling $9 million. There have been strikes which have permanently damaged the image of the Lowell Orchestra players among the middle class audiences on which they rely. The recent production by Kentucky Opera of The Marriage of Figaro with piano was for me a kind of deja vu sensation, because the orchestra struck in 1984, and on that occasion I produced L'Italiana in Algeri, the Italian girl in Algiers, with piano. This is a stopgap, but nobody believes for 1 minute it's a long-term solution to the opera's need for orchestral accompaniment. It has seemed over these 30 years that every round of negotiations has been a failure, which has ended with the manager's head being demanded on a platter like Salome and John the Baptist. No board president in 30 years has wanted the Lowell Orchestra to fail on his watch, so they have caved in to increasing numbers of orchestral union demands. Lowell Orchestra is not by any means unique in this sense. The Metropolitan Opera has been consistently blackmailed by its unions. But there are so many elements to this story that nobody will talk about. I mean, orchestras the world over have unions, and unions are a good thing. But like everything human, a good thing can be corrupted. And we have a situation where musicians want to be treated like artists and deserve to be, but behave like hourly line workers with their overtime demands and their advance notice of any change in schedule and other really rather ridiculous and certainly anachronistic role. There is a remarkable amount of feather bedding in any musician's contract, so that certain players work all the hours the Lord sends and others stay at home watching television on salary. This has given rise also to something which is never spoken about, and that's a civil war among the players. There is a dichotomy between those who play at the front desks and who tend to do all the work, and the more disenchanted backbenchers, if you might so describe them. And this has been a problem, I think, with orchestras the world over. There is also, in my view, a thing called, I call, the scourge of tenure, which means that any player, or academic for that matter, who can stagger through a couple of years without getting busted, is guaranteed a place for life. There's a labyrinthine process before you can replace older players. I think the saga of management board and players is not without its heroes. One or two people over that 30 years, Philip Lanier's name comes at once to mind, and Joe Pusateri, gave time, talent, and in Joe Pusateri's case, immense fortune to solving the systemic problems. But why has all this blown up now? It seems to me there are several reasons. One is that the recession has made money hard to come by. Another more serious one is that in the 1980s, music meant classical music or concert music. Music now, by default, means pop. And if you don't believe me, look at the arts pages of the New York Times, and you'll see that it's more likely to contain an article on a rapper or on a rock band than it is on a new production at the Met or the New York Philharmonic, which tend to be relegated to the back pages. I think in Louisville there are certain particular problems, whether the city demographic is not big enough to support a 71-piece orchestra, I'm not qualified to say. But what I do know is that the audience has been ageing. Time was when the only way to get tickets for a coffee concert was for an auntie to die and leave them to you. Now you can drive a truck through a coffee concert without risking harm. The Louisville Orchestra's business model is that it has a certain number of players on more or less permanent contract, 37 weeks of the year. The opera company brings in guest artists for every show, has no artists virtually on salary and a very small overhead. So the opera is flourishing because it has a business model which works, and the Louisville Orchestra is languishing because its business model does not work. I have to say, in my own personal view, the final word on this tragedy is that I think Louisville does not appear to want a full-time symphony orchestra. I believe, as I did when I first came to Louisville, that it wants a first-rate orchestra and opera company, but it's either not willing or unable to pay for it. The mentality which gives rise to headlines like "better libraries, yes, higher taxes, no," explains everything. Official Louisville plays lip service, but it actually gives very little support. Corporate Louisville does no better. In the 1980s, senior corporate execs sat on opera, ballet or orchestra boards, but in Stephen Klein's phrase, it was what you did. It's no longer what you do. On the artistic side, I think the fact that the Louisville Orchestra has not had a dynamic leadership in something like 40 years has produced ennui, boredom, and a lack of fire both on the players. I don't think the situation is hopeless. I think the Louisville Orchestra, as we know it, will not come back. I would be worried that the will be there to start up a replacement. But if it does, it's going to need a musical director who can give it the charisma, the drive, and the fire in the belly, which has been so sadly lacking for 40 years.